Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
My name's James Michaels.
Yay!
And I start giving myself a big round of applause first, and then sometimes one or two people join
now,
in. So thank
let's
you.
Let's get back to it.
Well, as all of you know, I'm the superintendent of the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Just finished our first year at our temporary home, away from home. But my first year as a superintendent, and they have not drugged me out, which is great, so I feel good about that. I have to say, folks, it has been an honor to be a part of the school at the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired. It's really my third time back there. So for those of you who don't know much about me, I was a student at the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired. That was called the Indiana School for the Blind back then. And that was back in 1979 through 1981. And then I worked there as a social worker, the school social worker, from 97 to 98. And then after that, my third time back was this past beginning of the school year in August. So it has been such a big part of my life, and I'm very honored to be a part of the school, and very, very honored to be a part of this group here, the alumni. So I'd like to first just say, let's hear it for the Rockets, baby. They think the Pacers are good. You got to watch the Rockets.
Yeah.
So just a little bit about me. When I came to the school for the blind, I have a condition called rod cone dystrophy. So it's a degenerative retinal condition. So the older I get, my blood vessels just keep dying and causing scar tissue to build up on my retina. And the retina is like that window that lets light come in. So if you never clean your window, it just keeps getting dirtier and dirtier. Finally, you can't really see out of it. So for me, I had quite a bit of usable vision up until around I was 13 or 14. So I was in public school reading small print and could see what they were writing on the board as long as I sat a little closer. Now, I definitely knew I was different than the other kids because I had to put my face closer to the book and had to sit closer to the board. And I ended up at my eighth grade year, I couldn't read small print any longer. And then I wasn't able to see what they were writing on the board. So I went from an AB student to getting some D's and F's and C's. And a big part of that's because I was too proud to carry the large print books around. But yeah, I thought I was too cool. Obviously I wasn't, but that's what you know how it is when you're a kid. You don't want to be different. And but I ended up really giving it a shot my ninth grade year. I'm like, I'm really going to try hard and carry the books and do whatever I can to get my grades up. And I went from getting four F's my eighth grade year to getting some, you know, B's, C's, and D's my ninth grade year. And I knew I was just as smart as my friends who were in school with me and that I grew up with. And so it just so happened after my ninth grade year, there was a principal from Richmond, Indiana. He was at another elementary school nearby, and his daughter was going to the Indiana School for the Blind. And he came and talked to my mom and me and said, hey, there's a school in Indianapolis where they have teachers who are trained to work with people who are visually impaired. And he actually said, you know, it's called the Indiana School for the Blind. And I was like, well, I'm not blind. You know, I've spent so much of my life trying to hide that I was visually impaired. And but he said, no, he said, there's a lot of kids there who are visually impaired like you. Some kids are totally blind. Some kids have some usable vision. But they have teachers there in smaller class sizes that can help you to continue to move forward. So I went there on a tour, and I didn't know if I was going to go. And as I was taking a tour, it was during the summertime, so there were no kids there. And Miss Drummond was taking me around. Does anybody remember Miss Drummond? Yeah, Miss Drummond. And as I'm walking around that big empty school, I'm like, I'm going to have to live here, away from my family. There's no way I'm going there. And then, just so happens, this big, tall, blonde-haired guy comes around the corner. And he has a distinct voice. I think some of you may know him, Lou Moneymaker. Yes, Lou Moneymaker. And so he comes around and says, "Hey, James, how are you? I heard you're taking a tour today." And I said, "Yes, I am." And they talked with him about me. They told him that I was interested in sports and played sports. So he starts talking with me about school and sports. And the next thing I know, he's got me penciled in for some different events. And that does sound like Lou. And after that, you know, I walked around the corner again. And I'm like, I guess I'll be coming to school here, you know. So it was the best thing that ever happened to me, folks. After a few weeks of being at the Indiana School for the Blind, I had this epiphany that I'm not so different. I just have to do things different. All the kids that were there, they weren't so different. They weren't different than my friends at public school. They just had to do things different. And that was a huge boost to my self-esteem. Got my grades up, got my GPA up, and then ended up graduating at Richmond High School. I went and graduated with all my friends I grew up with. And then I went into, believe it or not, I went into computer programming at Ivy Tech. And I was going to go to Ball State. And we have mixed feelings there about Ball State. But what happened was I met a girl. And I was thinking, boy, I live in Richmond. That's a far drive from Ball State and Muncie. So I ended up going to Ivy Tech and took some classes in computer programming. I was three classes shy of getting my associate degree, and something happened. I went for a job interview as a computer operator. It just meant at nighttime at a bank, I would be just running reports. And I went in there, and there was the lady I was interviewing with came out and handed me an application. And said, "Hey, fill this out, and then we'll have the interview." And I'm like, "Well, I can't read small print unless I use a CCTV." I was talking about my CCTV. And she said, "If you can't read this, then you're not going to be able to do the job." And I'm like, "If I have this piece of technology," and she says, "I'm not going to waste your time or mine." She grabs me by the arm and starts walking with me over to the elevator. And so she pushes the button, I get on that elevator, and I'm just numb, to be honest. I'm going downstairs. My mom had drove me there, because I never did have enough vision to get my driver's license. So I sat down on the bench in front of that bank and waited for her to come, and I decided, that's it. I am not going to continue going to school as a computer programmer. Nobody's going to give me a chance. So I went into a big pity party. Yeah, you know how that goes. We can all do that. We're good. We can be good at it. I know I can be very good at it from time to time. So I decided, you know what? I'm breaking up with my girlfriend. She deserves somebody better than me. I'm just gonna go ahead and just not even worry about doing anything. Just sit back and feel sorry for myself. So I got out of that about 6 weeks later. My girlfriend had moved on, which is was very, very sad, but telling. It was probably not the right person for me. But ended up getting a job at the Indiana School for the Deaf as a house parent. And I was the only legally blind house parent on campus. And I was there and I worked with 11 kids, ages 7 to 11. And I thought going to the Indiana School for the Deaf is going to be really quiet there, you know. They're not talking. It's going to be quiet. It'll be cool. And after that first day, I realized, wow, this isn't quiet at all, but it's a blast. I loved working with those kids. And after a couple of years, I ended up getting promoted to a supervisory position. Spent 10 years there till my vision started really going down pretty quickly, and realized it was hard to see sign language anymore. And I had to get closer and closer to the kids, to the parents, to my staff. And I ended up going and getting a bachelor's and master's in social work. So, if there's any social workers here, let's hear it for them. All two of us. And three or four, okay, great. And so I ended up getting my first job out of college at the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired. At that time, there was 200 kids on campus, and I worked with the high school students. Loved it. It was a great opportunity for me. And then another job came open that I always wanted, and that was at Bosma Rehabilitation Center. Yeah, let's hear it for Bosma too, folks. And at that time, I was the adjustment counselor, and I was providing individual and group counseling to folks who had recently lost vision. And maybe they'd lost vision through diabetes, glaucoma, all the conditions you hear about and read about. Also, we had folks who came through from gunshot wounds, maybe people trying to shoot themselves or getting involved in different types of situations where they lost their vision. I worked with several folks, I don't say several, but I'd say a handful of people who lost their vision from meth lab explosions. And, so many different personalities, so many individuals that I was able to be a part of seeing them grow and move forward with their lives. So it was an awesome experience. And then I ended up getting promoted as the director of the Vision Rehab Center. And then I ended up getting promoted as the vice president of programs. So one thing I'd like to say I'm very proud of through my career when I worked at BOSMA was that when I started there, we served 12 people. And when I finished, we ended up serving 936 people. So I got to see growth like you would not believe, and I got to be a part of developing programs and helping people who were blind or visually impaired get jobs, and it was just an awesome experience. So then I landed at the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired. And some people said, could you pick a worse time to go, because they're moving out of the location where they've been for 100 years, and we were moving to 3 different locations. And that's what we did. We moved to 3 different locations. And you know what? It's been tough. I'm going to be honest. It has not been easy. For them moving 100 years worth of stuff. Yeah, stuff. And by the way, teachers, are there any teachers in this room? Okay, very good. Most teachers are hoarders, I believe. And they do. If they think they've used it one time in 10 years, there may be another kid coming around that's going to need that particular piece of equipment as well. So, but they ended up moving, and we're at 3 locations. So School 94 is our education building. So that's where the on-site campus is right now. And that's on the near east side of Indianapolis. It's at first, everybody was very skeptical, but then we realized there's some real perks to being in one building. So that was nice, especially for the education. You see the little kids who didn't want to carry a cane, see the high school kids, some of the cool high school and middle school kids carrying a cane. So that's been really nice, just having that bond, the bond with the teachers as well. The teachers are, the ones who really rarely saw folks from Lambert or Outer, now they have an opportunity to collaborate and get to know one another on a larger scale. So it's been a good year. And to culminate this year, what I would say is there are times when I'm like, wow, I put in 60 hours this week. And I think to myself, I'm wore out. And I had I was at BOSMA for 22 years. I could have rode out into the sunset and, coasted, to be honest, in many ways. But then at graduation, so we had 8 kids graduating. And at graduation, for those of you who remember that time, typically what happens is, there's the I'll do the intro, the superintendent does, the opening remarks, welcome folks. Then we have our choir and band do a little number. I'm going to sound like a jazz guy. But they do a little number there. And then we have our valedictorian. She gave an awesome presentation, by the way. Minnie, yeah. Yep, you guys know Minnie. Whoever knows Minnie, she's an awesome, awesome person. And then the commencement speaker. So our commencement speaker for my first time as the superintendent and the first time at our home away from home was Lou Moneymaker. Did an awesome job. Yes, we love Lou. And so then what happens is the principal goes up, starts announcing the kids, and tells, has each kid come up, they walk up onto the stage, they stop and they shake the hand of our board chair, and they get a picture with Jay in our board chair, and then they come across the stage, and then they shake our counselor's hand, our school social work, our school counselor, and they shake my hand, and then they move their tassel, from the right to the left. So as I was shaking every kid's hand, I was saying to them, I believe in you. I believe in you. You're going to do awesome things out there. And let me tell you, folks, I believe in every one of those kids. And that was something that, yeah, absolutely, we believe in that. So that was my message coming into the School for the Blind, is we want to make sure those kids know we believe in them and we support them. So as I'm shaking every kid's hand and I say, I believe in you, and then they, you know, get their picture and walk off the stage, the fifth kid up there, I shook his hand and I said, I believe in you. And he says to me in a sincere voice, he says, I believe in you too. You know, I'm a big softy, and you know, it doesn't take much for me to tear up. And when he said that, bang, just a tear rolled right down my cheek, and I'm like, that's why we're here. That's why we're part of the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired. Every one of us, that love and the way we believe in each other, that's what it's about. So those 60-hour weeks, every one of them was worth it for that last day, just dealing with that. So I love being there. I'm passionate about it, and I'm so thankful that I'm thankful to be there. I'm thankful that I'm part of this group here, this alumni. So what's been happening at the school? So this past year, we served over 1,000 kids who are blind or visually impaired in the state of Indiana. And we did that through our three core offerings. The Indiana Education Resource Center, that's where we have a repository, and this is at School 83, by the way. So School 94 on the Near East Side is where our education building's at. And then our IERC, our business office, and our foundation, and our IT department is all located over at School 83, which is off of 42nd Street. And then our residential component right now is at the Indiana School for the Deaf. So at our IERC, with our IERC, we provided 658 students around the state with accessible materials, whether it's large print, Braille. We also provided them with different pieces of technology that we were able to purchase through grants and through federal dollars. And what we do is we get this material that's sent into our repository, clean it up, make sure everything's looking good, and then send it out to local education associations around the state of Indiana. A lot of that Braille and large print, I don't know if all of you know this, is created and manufactured out at Miami Accessible Media Products Program, which is at Miami Correctional Facility. So we have 30 inmates who work on creating accessible materials. And it's helping us and helping students who are visually impaired around the state to receive access, equal access to the materials that, you know, kids who are sighted have access to through print. And so we have that program. It's been an awesome program. And a lot of those folks, once they complete their time and their correctional time and serve their time, they go out and they will have an opportunity, if they'd like to, start their own business and have their own Braille business and do quite well with it. If anybody's, would we have any transcribers in the room? I know Corey is. Anybody else? Yes. Yep. Is Dee in the room?
Yeah.
Hi, Dee. How are you? Good to see you, Dee. And who else?
Jenny Smart.
And Jenny as well. Yeah. So, you know, it can be lucrative. So I will be borrowing some money from you guys here in a little bit if we could. Just take care of you, James.
Appreciate it.
Yeah, the poor blind social worker is what I like to say. But at any rate, so that's where what we do with our IERC, our Indiana Educational Resource Center. And then our outreach program, it's called outreach, but it's really itinerant teaching. So we have 9 teachers who are certified and blind, low vision endorsed, who go out there and they work with students all around the state of Indiana. Last year, we served 325 individuals who were blind, 325 students, all around the state of Indiana. And that's been a really nice support to the local school districts. And then finally, we served 100 individuals this past year at our on-site campus. Now, that number did decrease slightly, and we are pretty sure because of moving to the new location. But we are starting to see a lot of interest. So that's been a really fun thing, seeing people come in and getting to talk to the parents and students who are on tours. So I'm going to come down now and we'll just talk with you about some of the things that I did when I first came in as a superintendent. So when I came in, I wanted to make sure that people didn't think, hey, I'm coming in thinking things are broken and I've got to fix everything. That was not the mindset that I wanted the team to feel. I didn't want them to feel that from me, that I'm going to come in and just rock the boat and turn everything upside down right away. You know, my feeling was I was going to come in. I've got some ideas on how I would like to see some things tweaked and revised, but I'm going to come in also and talk with the team. So my first month there, I met with every single person that works there. So it was, and not individually, but in small groups. And we have 140 people working at the school right now. So I asked them, hey, what's going well? What can we improve upon? So that was a way for me to get to know our different teams, but it was also a way that I could find out from people who were living it, you know, living it, walking it, breathing it for the last, you know, we have one person just retired with almost 34 years of time there. But I wanted to learn from them. So that was really good. I got some good ideas and got some information about what they felt was important. And then we started tweaking some things. One of the first things that I felt was very important, and I always felt like this was important at Bosma as well, and that's for us to build relationships and to build community partners. One thing that I know for sure is that if we're going to combat this 70% unemployment rate, which in Indiana it's a little lower, it's around 62%. If we're going to combat that, then we have to work together as a team. So building stronger relationships with our community partners was one of the big initiatives that we started right away. Started setting up some meetings. I got to speak this past year at the National Federation of the Blind Convention. I had the opportunity to speak at the American Council for the Blind's convention. We ended up getting some time to spend with visually impaired preschool services, which now we have monthly meetings with them. And because one thing I noticed when I first came in is I was like, let's see the preschool program. And we have one kid. And I'm like, how is that possible for us to only have one kid in our preschool program? So I really felt like it's going to be important for us to work with visually impaired preschool services. They serve 200 to 300 kids every year from the ages 0 to 3. So, you know, where's that connection? So we started working with them, and they're awesome. They're a really good group of individuals. And by the way, I do want you to tell you this, and I know it's baby steps, but this next year we have double the amount of preschool kids that we are going to have. We have two now. Two? Yes. Oh my gosh, there's a man. Was that our new treasurer that said that? Who said that? I hope they are the person who's going to be big entries. But we have four or five who are out there considering. So hopefully we'll end up having about five or six kids in our preschool this year. Through our gala, which is the Indiana Blind Children's Foundation biggest fundraiser of the year, and that'll be September 6th. If people would like to come, I would love to see you there. We're raising funds to support and strengthen our early childhood education programs. So we are going to re-envision our preschool. So that's one of the big initiatives that we got going right now. So also through the collaborations, we are getting more involved with the Indiana AER. We have had speakers come in to talk to our juniors and seniors from the National Federation of the Blind, the American Council of the Blind. Lee Martin came in and talked with them about Newsline, and we had Don Coors coming in talking about some of the programs that ACB has. Is Don in here?
Yes.
Yes, Don. Thank you for coming that day. Absolutely. And so those are some of the things that are really important, building collaborations. And then also, too, committee structures. We started with new committees at the school. One of the things that was I really, really want us to do is make sure that we are the leaders in accessibility. So we have created an accessibility committee, and we have a number of our team involved in that. And what we're looking at is just making sure anytime we do something at the school, we start really being thoughtful about what's the accessibility like. I'm talking about software programs that we purchase, the different technology that we're providing to our students, as well as just the instruction in the school itself. you know, from an environmental standpoint, structural infrastructure as well. So we're looking at that in a more intentional way. We've also started a wellness committee that's, you know, we're talking with our kids and our staff about just being healthy. And what's that like for individuals who are blind or visually impaired? Some of the things that maybe we could do when we could see more, we have to adjust that. So we're talking about ways in which students who are blind or visually impaired and adults who are blind, but also just adults, our teachers, how we can stay healthier. And so we ended up having a wellness fair. We had 14 vendors in our gym, and it was a really fun time. One of the kids at the end of the day was leaving, and he said, "Today's the best day ever." And we're like, "Well, why is that?" You know, and he said, "Because we have the wellness fair." So I love that. You know? So but wellness is a big push, and then also too social media. One of the things, for those of you who remember the show Cheers, you know, I want to have this philosophy: everybody knows our name. You know, and part of that is we have to really make sure people know what we're doing. All the good work that we're doing, we need to make sure we highlight that. So if those of you who are on our Facebook page, you know we've been increasing our posts. Is that right? Does anybody know that?
Yeah. Yep.
So it's been so good. So we've had, through our post, we've had some of the largest hits we've had in the last 5 years. Our beeping egg hunt, does anybody hear about that? We had a beeping egg hunt at the school. We had over 2,000 views on those pictures.
Cool.
We ended up having Maureen Braun, Governor Braun's wife, come.
Wow.
Lovely person, by the way. Got down on her knees with the kids. He's talking with them, and just, she was awesome. But that was a big one. Then also, Braille Challenge had over 2,000 posts views this year. Our engagement, we really wanted to also increase our engagement, not just people looking at, but also interacting with our post. So we've had a 57% increase since December in the engagement that we've had from our social media committee work. Then we also, and by the way, we do have an Instagram now. We've got 44 people on there, so hey, we need to increase that, so please feel free to jump on our Instagram. And then something else that's really been important is the expanded core curriculum. And the expanded core curriculum, that is 9 areas. And when you think about the expanded core curriculum at a school, why do you need an expanded core curriculum? So we have the academic curriculum, we have the curriculum for students who are in our life skills programs, but the expanded core curriculum, that's where kids pick up on information and receive information and learn. So if you think about this, 80% of the learning that takes place for children is through visual feedback, just watching their parents, watching their siblings, watching their friends, looking at them and seeing how they do things. So when you're working with kids who aren't able to see the same way that their peers see, or maybe they're not able to see anything at all, we have to make sure that they have opportunities to access that information in a different way. So I've hired a gentleman named Nick Leon. Wow. He's a teacher of the visually impaired, but he also worked at BOSMA, and he's an orientation mobility instructor. So he is heading up our expanded core curriculum program. And the expanded core curriculum, that's 9 areas, so I'll say them real quick, unless anybody wants to spout them out real quickly.
Okay.
Very good. I've never had anybody get it right exactly, and the only reason I have is I practiced it a lot. So, but the first thing is your assistive technology. Then we have our career exploration, compensatory skills, and that refers to accessing curriculum. We have independent living skills, orientation and mobility, recreation and leisure, self-determination, social skills, and sensory efficiency, enhancing a kid's sensory efficiency. So those are the core areas that we're looking at. We're really building a structure to where we can look at those things in a more directed way. So we've been doing that at the school for a number of years, and that's why the School for the Blind is so awesome and so special, but it's also something that we need to continue to work on and enhance. So we are targeting that. The next year as well, we are really going to have a strong push for getting laptops in the hands of our students. I believe I'm with you. You all know. You know. You're living it. You know some of the most successful people out there who are working are people who know how to use their computer with assistive technology. Because it's not just like I've got to learn how to use the Windows-based programs. It's also using the Windows-based program with a screen reader and a screen magnification program and or. So I'm working with some of our funders, and let me tell you, I think most of you know that we ended up having a 5% budget cut this year, right? And we're not the only one. All the state agencies did. So for us, we were really having to be strategic on how we approach the next couple of years, because it's a biennium budget. So as a part of this, it really is looking at fundraising for some of the equipment, things that we need. So I'm working with the Lions Club and the Indiana Blind Children's Foundation, and if everything keeps going the way I want it to, I'm going to knock on wood here. By the start of the year, we should have enough laptops with Fusion loaded on them to be able to serve kids from third grade and up. That's what we have. Now, Lou used to tell me this at Bogma: don't count your money before it's in the bank, but hey, I'm putting it out there in the universe. We're going to have it, you know. But I've got some good commitments, and I believe in it. And I know it's so important. You know, we placed hundreds of people into jobs at Bosma, and some of the most successful ones were people who knew how to use a computer. And that's regardless if it's our academic kids, our kids in our life skills programs, just being able to send emails, doing some things that is important, doing your timesheets, things like that, is so, so important when you're out there looking for jobs and when you're going into higher education. I mean, I love the Braille notes and everything like that, but honestly, it's a $5,000 to $6,000 Braille note when you get out of school. How many people are able to integrate those into their workplace on a, you know, that where the people that work with you are going to be able to want to support that year after year, so we can get laptops and a Braille display, you know, we can do it in a much less expensive manner. Now, I love the Braille notes, and they definitely have their purpose, and I support them 100%. They help so much with vertical math or in those kinds of things, but we also need to focus on the computers, what they're using out there in the mainstream world. That's what I'm looking at pushing. So we also are looking at increasing our assistive tech classes. This next year we are going to have assistive technology classes for our middle school and high school students. We're also going to put goals around typing, knowing how to use the keyboard. For those folks who use a screen reader, you know how important it is to know hotkey commands and to be efficient with those things. So we're going to have a 10% goal for all of our kids, third grade and up, to increase their typing speed. That's going to be our goal. So we'll see how that all works out. We're going to purchase a program called, we're looking at a program called Typeio. So we'll see how that goes as well.
What is it, James?
Typeio. Oh. Typeio is being used by some of the other schools for the blind. And one of my people I work with have used it when they worked in another school and thought it was really good. It's a kind of a gamified program. And so we're going to implement that. As soon as I get that through the state's, how to go through all that process with the legalese and all those things. But we're hoping to get that going by August as well. So those are some of the major pushes. And then one last thing that we're going to be doing this next year that's a little different is we are going to be transitioning a teacher from their teaching role to a parent engagement role. We know how important it is to get parents involved. When I first came to the school, I asked our principal, I said, hey, how is it with the parent engagement? And he said, we really need to improve it. You know, our PTO, we used to have a PTO, and when COVID hit, we kind of, that disbanded. So I really want to get a PTO together. I really feel like it's important for us to have monthly sessions, not only for our parents, for kids that go to the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired, but also for our parents around the state of Indiana, to learn about how they can best get their kids ready for whatever the next step is. If it's a preschooler, getting them ready for elementary school. If it's an elementary school kid, for middle school, high school, so on, post-secondary education, whatever the next step is. But having parents involved, you know, we've heard from different research that we've done with the Indiana Blind Children's Foundation that Parents feel isolated. They feel like they're the only one out there. And we need to make sure that we're getting the word out and being targeted about that as well. So those are some of the things that are upcoming. Now, I don't know how we're doing time-wise, but I'm sure everybody wants to hear about the renovation project. Should we talk about
get questions 10 to 15 now, minutes, yes.
Let's go ahead and go through that a little bit before we do that.
20 minutes.
20 minutes, very good.
10.
Okay.
15.
10, yeah. 15, okay.
Yeah.
It's all over the place, so yeah. Just get the hook out when it's time.
Yeah.
So with the relocation project, I'm just going to give you all a little history about how it got to this point. So it was about 6 years ago, the School for the Blind and the School for the Deaf, which both locations are very old. Everybody knows the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired is a roughly 100-year-old campus. And what was happening is the infrastructure was just really crumbling down around itself. I can remember Jim Durst, my predecessor, who would call and tell me, hey, we've got some flooding at the school. We're going to have to close off this part of the building. We're going to have to try to get some things to come in. Then he called me and say, oh, by the way, we had a roof leak. We lost a bunch of books in the library. We never could get the infrastructure right in the pool, so the pool had been closed for years. So honestly, it was costing so much money. There were capital projects that were going on year over year. Finally, the state said, something's got to give here. So they created a task force to determine the efficacy of having either a Indiana School for the Blind and Deaf or Deaf and Blind, whatever they want to call it. They got a task force together, and I was on the task force, so was Don Coors, and so was Joyce Wade. Her daughter, Joyce Wade's daughter, Joyce. And then several individuals from the deaf community. And part of the task force is we said before we even start talking about this whole idea of, you know, having the school together, is let's do a feasibility study to see what it would cost over the next 20 years to maintain the schools. So they got contractors in, and they went through both schools, you know, from underground tunnel area and above, and they came back with this enormous cost. And then the decision was, you know, the state legislature and folks thought we really need to put these two schools together, share resources, and maybe build this new campus somewhere outside of either location, either the Indiana School for the Blind, College Avenue, or the East 42nd Street location at the School for the Deaf. We need to go outside of there and find a neutral site. So the goal was to find something within a 10-mile radius of 465 in Indianapolis. And the reasoning behind that was, the feeling was that it would be easier to stay, you know, inside of the state capitol, somewhere nearby the state capitol. Also, for getting teachers, it's so hard to find teachers with a deaf ed or a blind low vision background, that it would be easier to attract the educational team that you need if you do live near Indianapolis. So that search went on for, gosh, Don, I would bet 6 months to 9 months, and there was nothing was coming up that was going to be within our price range, and also that was going to be viable. So then the suggestion was made, you know, it's a 66-acre beautiful campus on North College Avenue. What about just doing a big renovation project there? And people kind of thought about that and molded it around, and finally that did come up as the decision. And the state legislator agreed to put a significant amount of money into this project. So that whole process started, you know, took place, getting architects and getting groups together and talking about what this school might look like. And the budget originally, and this is if I'm wrong, Don, please tell me, but I think it was somewhere around $275 million. So after the first renderings were coming out and the architects were coming back, it was getting close to $1 billion. to create the state-of-the-art campus that we'd love to have. And so then our state legislators are like, you got to go back to the drawing board, which we understand that. You know, that was a big amount. That was our Disneyland, really. So then what happened was they came back with kind of architectural schematics 2.0, and that's what we have now. So right now it's a $655 million budget. So it's still, you know, much higher than what it originally was thought to be. But I think everybody knows this too, after COVID, prices went up immensely for everything, and including the cost of building a campus. So where we landed now is there has been a lot of tearing down of buildings right now. So if any of us walked on that campus right now, we would probably, our heartstrings would be torn apart, to be honest, because so many buildings that we knew and loved have been removed. But I want you to think about this. We are going to have an amazing campus when it's all said and done. The thought is similar to a college campus, a small college campus. There's going to be some walkability, of course, in a lot of different areas, and it's really going to be an awesome school. So the buildings that have remained, I'll start with that for those of you who have a great familiarization with the buildings. So the buildings that have remained are E, F, and G. That's what we're calling the campus center. And as well as the three buildings, the laundry, garage, and the powerhouse. So those buildings are remaining, and they're going to get refurbished. So all those will be refurbished and renewed. We're not really sure what's going to go in the garages right now, but they are remaining. And in the campus center, that is going to house it's going to house our foundations. It's going to house our business offices. It's going to house both superintendents from the School for the Deaf and Blind. Because the task force was very clear about this, is that, you know, we definitely see the reasons for having the school, both schools on one campus, to share resources, things like maintenance, cafeteria, you know, all those kinds of things that you can share. But we do want to have our unique schools. We still need to have our identity as the Indiana School for the Blind and Visually Impaired, and the Indiana School for the Deaf wants to maintain their identity. So the way to do that is we felt like having two different schools, two separate schools, two separate residential locations. So the main campus building, though, is where we'll have some of those things. And then the auditorium will be there, of course, and it's getting expanded to some degree. And then we're going to have our education building, which is going to be a four-story building, and there's going to be a School for the Deaf wing and a School for the Blind wing. And it's going to be located, if you're facing the campus center, I'm going to try to describe it as best as possible. As you're facing the campus center, it's going to be off to the left of that, somewhere near where the houses were, somewhere up and around that area. So that's and push back a little farther east as well. So we're going to have our campus center, our education building there, and then just east of that is going to be our residence hall. It's going to be a four-story building as well, and that's going to have once again a wing for the a wing for the school for the deaf and a wing for the school for the blind. And in that campus center is where we'll have the student center on the first floor. And we'll have a small store there. And we'll have our health center, health centers there as well. Right now, the way it's all set up is, each school will still have their own health centers. That may end up changing as time goes on. I'm not sure, but that's the way it is right now. So then our horticulture program will still be at the same place that it was before.
Good.
Kind of right out there in this, just in front of the two buildings, the residence hall and the education building, and we're going to get two big greenhouses. So that program will still keep moving forward. And then for our cafeteria, the cafeteria is going to be where the pool was, so where the aquatic center was. So they're going to fill in the pool, and they're going to put our cafeteria there. We'll still have two separate dining halls. It's going to be something, you know, like a divider in the middle, and we'll have two separate dining halls, but if we need to open up, we can. And then we're going to have the field house will be, I guess the best way to describe this is, you know, behind the school, just over to the right, kind of towards the south. And it's going to be a big...
Towards the back gate, James?
No, it's not going to be that far back. But it'll And by the way, on IDOA's website, there are some pictures. If you can get someone to describe those to you, it might be great to take a look at those. But it's going to be kind of out the back door. If you go out, the main campus, kind of a little bit to your right and back a little bit. So that's where our field house will be. There's going to be our service center where our maintenance is located. That's going to be a little farther east and kind of southeast. And then we'll have our Indiana Education Resource Center. We're going to have a 10,000 square foot building there that's going to be able to house all of the accessible materials that we'll be distributing throughout the state. And so that's really, I look at it as a total of 10 buildings. Now there's going to be a snack shop down below as well where all the athletics are. So we're going to have our track with our wires that we need, those kinds of things. There's going to be a baseball field down there, a football field, a softball field. So there'll be a number of fields, and those are kind of down in the lower, like we always call the lower 40.
Down the valley area.
But they will do some building up of the ground there as well to be able to get more fields in. Now, like I said, I really feel like it's going to be an awesome campus. Now, is it everything we wanted? No. One of the things that we don't have is a pool. Yeah, I know. And I've already started talking with the Lions Club and our Indiana Blind Children's Foundation and the School for the Deaf Foundation that we need to raise some money for a pool. It's not only something that's great for, you know, our students for competition, but it's also just a life skill that's so important. And the School for the Deaf is on board with that as well. So it did not hit the budget. That's somewhere between a $15 to $20 million endeavor to have a pool that we're interested in having. So, actually, I'd be interested in a small pool as well, but a pool that we're going to look towards raising funds for at some point. But anyway, that's kind of the layout of the school. It definitely is different. You know, nobody can go in there right now unless you go in with a hard hat and, you know, and get around to the school. But it is going to be good. It's going to be a good school. Now, questions for me. I've talked a long time.
20 minutes.
Okay.
You still have to do the nominations.
Yes, I know.
Yep.
I've got a question.
Yeah. Who do we have here?
Tim Schulte, class of
18. Hi, Tim. Yeah, I haven't seen you forever.
Is there any proposal or possibility of getting a 3D model of the proposed school made so that those that cannot see the website or anything would be able to come somewhere and be able to see actually what the campus is going to look like instead of just verbally?
Yes. There is a model that I can get from our architects because they have provided one. It's not a giant model, so it's a small version. It kept changing. But I have a model that I like, and it's a small model. It's kind of, it's probably 3 feet by 3 feet. And for me, it's really easy to kind of follow around where everything's located. You know, it kind of gives you an indicator of where the entrances are and those things. And so anybody would like to see that. Really, if you'd like to see that and would want to come out to the school, you can email me, and Barb has my email address. Anybody would like that, she can certainly share that, but it's pretty easy. It's jmichaels@isbvik12.org. So jmichaels@isbvik12.org.
It would have been nice to have that at the convention.
We can do it next time. We can possibly do it next time.
It would have been nice.
I agree. I'm sorry, did I bring that?
James?
Yes.
It's Bo Markham here. Remember me?
Hi, Bo. Yes.
And you're your brother are Vikings fans. But
we are. Yes, still are. It's a long, hard road.
I hope he's doing well, and it's great seeing you. I just want to say congratulations on your position there and what you're doing. And first question is, with the you said you're one of the teachers is transitioning to parent coordinator. I was just wondering what that is. And then it's too bad about the pool. I thought they were going to have one. But the second thing is, will the alumni be able to come to the school more often and be involved maybe with the kids in some respect? I know there has to be rules.
Yeah. If, you know, there if there's something that you'd like to do and say, hey, I'd like to come and work doing this or that, please let me know. Reach out. And we can certainly look at doing that. So if there's something that you feel like, oh, this is a skill set I'd like to share with the kids, or you know, some time I'd like to spend with them, let me know. Of course, we have volunteers. We go through all the background checks and all of those things. But yeah, absolutely. And for the parent liaison position, they're going to be doing some outreach. They'll go and talk to all the special ed directors around the state, and just talking about what we're doing, some of the new things we're doing, and also seeing if they can provide support in different areas of the state. And they'll also, you know, reach out to parents, and we're going to have different activities. We'll probably have a activity in different parts of the state at least once a quarter, where we're going to bring in some of our team members and have parents come in for whether it's some... For young kids, we might do a stay and play, have them come in, and we'll talk with them about how you can do activities with your kids and make it fun and enjoyable. For the older kids, we may end up doing, you know, a beat baseball day, or try to get a gym where we can do some goal ball, or we'll just do some round tables, some support discussions as well. So we're going to have that person take the lead on those type of situations. And then we're going to have a kind of a hybrid. We'll start out with a hybrid opportunities for a monthly kind of like a coffee, you know, session, just kind of learn about what's happening in the world of blindness, and we'll have guest speakers come in, and I could definitely see us having some of the folks in this room come in and speak on some of those sessions as well. I think it'd be great for parents to see, you know, a lot of times we'll have calls that come in, or parents will come in with their kids. We just recently had a parent who, her daughter is 3 years old, and she ended up having some condition that caused her to lose most of her vision. And she comes in and she's talking to our principal and says, you know, I thought my little girl was going to be normal. And you know, our principal's like, she's still normal. She just sees differently. And she can still have a wonderful life. So for the parents to be able to see, you know, talk to role models who that, you know, they can see that these folks have had a good life, they're successful, they're out there working, they're living an amazing life. Just you're doing it without vision, and that's okay.
Living the dream.
Living the dream, absolutely. All right.
Is the school going to be looking to grow the population or to continue to shrink it?
Honestly, I feel like there's a lot of kids out there who are visually impaired that need the services that we offer. And honestly, I'd love to see us get to a much larger number.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I have a question. This is Alice Richard.
Yes.
When you get the money, donations for a pool, where then would the pool be put?
That we don't know yet, but I told the architects, you've got to save us a space for the pool. So they assure me that they are going to have a spot for us. They haven't told me where yet, but they have assured me that there is going to be a place. Yeah.
James?
Yes.
Jeff Platson?
Hi, Jeff.
From 77. Son's sister. No, I graduated from 77.
All right.
So I hear that you're not going to have scouts and not going to have a bowling alley. Is that true?
The bowling alley did not make it either into the budget.
I hear they're hard to keep.
Yeah, so we are not. And for the scouts, I would love to see us get a scout program going again. We don't have one right now, but I would love to see that. We actually didn't have clubs this past year. and we are revamping our schedule, because clubs were easier back when you could finish up school and they could go walk down the hall to their clubs. Now, when we have clubs, you know, we have to transport our students all the way back to the school for the deaf, and for transportation purposes, it was just a logistical nightmare. So what we're doing is we're revamping our schedule, and Friday afternoons, every other Friday, we're going to have clubs again. And I would love it if we had somebody who volunteered to say, let's get some scouts going. But right now, we are going to have clubs again, but we don't have a scout program yet.
Are they still, or you think it's going to open up where, you know, I think what hurts the kids is that the state has to, we can't afford to pay the lights and pay the cooks to feed the students on the weekends, but I think staying on the weekends helps a student mature and get ready for the outside life than going home every weekend.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah,
it's hard on kids to go home every night that lives 60 miles away.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you think down the road that funds will open up where they'll get athletics and stuff on Saturdays like they used to, or do you think it's going to be
Now we do have some weekends where our kids have gone to conference. You know, we had our wrestling conference that our kids went to, and that was I can't remember if that was in Ohio or it was Tennessee, right?
Track was in Ohio.
Track did get canceled because there was 60 mile an hour wind gust, and we weren't gonna put our kids on a bus with 60 mile an hour wind gust. Yeah. I know. Yeah. So, but they do go on weekend trips. And it's not as often as it used to be. And I also want to, I can't wait till we get back to our campus and we'll have wrestling tournaments, track tournaments at our campus again. Because we were a big spot for that in the past.
So, you said the athletics be down in that, they're going to move all that down in the valley area close to the track?
Well, for track, will be down the valley, and then goal ball, of course, will be in the different gyms. Swimming, right now we've been using North Central to do our swimming practices. And bowling, we use, here lately we've been using All-Star Bowls, what we're looking at using.
Oh, cool.
Another question, Christine Wim again.
Hi, Christine.
Will the students be able to access classes, high school students specifically, at North Central again, while they're still at this IPS campus, so that they can learn to get dual credit for college and things like that?
Yeah, we just, this past year, we were really trying to get in to Lawrence North and Warren Central's, you know, kind of like the JEL programs, their career technical CTE programs, so we did not have any luck with that. So what we've done is we reached back out to North Central, and I just signed an MOU with them for us to send kids to JEL again.
Yay.
And also, yeah, I agree.
Awesome.
North Central's been awesome with that. And we also we got a kid who's getting ready to get signed up for classes at North Central High School as well. So yes, we're gonna keep that relationship going. They're amazing. It's more of a drive for us. So it was really nice when it was five minutes away, but we're figuring out a way to do that. And yes, they do, and Barb had mentioned this, we still have a group of students that go over to Bosma and work a couple days a week. So that's been great as well. That's a great partnership that we've been so fortunate to have.
James, are we going to be able to have a chance to go back on the campus once everything's done and all that good stuff?
Oh, yes, absolutely. So Corey asked if you're going to have a chance to come on the campus once it's all done, and absolutely. I'll tell you, I want to remind me of this 3 years from now, because the goal is for us to get back in there by August of 2028, so back for the 2028 school year. So that, well, construction projects, we've never had luck at my house getting things done quicker than I expected. But before we even, if we can get that going that summer, before we have kids come in, I'll make sure we have you all come in, okay? So I definitely want to make sure that happens.
James, this is Dean. Are you able to have any summer school type things, or have you had to cancel those since the school?
Yes. Hi, Dina, by the way. I did not know you were here. Well, we this year, we've got four camps going. So our budget, the 5% cut's going to be next school year. So we still have the fiscal years from July 1 through June 30th. So we are able to still have camps this summer. So this past week, we had our Camp Abilities camp, and that was for middle school kids, and they did all kinds of different sports. I was out there on Monday playing baseball with them. They did five-side soccer, which from what I hear from the staff, that was interesting. tricky, let's say that. They did goalball. They did a swim trip. They went to a water park and had an awesome time. And then next week, we are going to be having our sea camp. So one of the things that, I think all of you who've been around a while, and some of you who spent some time in education, you know this. Traditionally, children who are blind or visually impaired are 1.5 to 2 years behind with their reading and math. So as a part of that, we really have to, we have to really emphasize what we're doing with those skills. So I asked our team to give us a week-long camp that's more academic-related. So this next week, we're going to have 12 high school and middle school kids come in, and it's going to be a four-track route. So we're going to have reading, math, independent living skills, and assistive technology. So all throughout the week, every day, they're going to cycle into different classes with teachers and some of our paraprofessionals and really try to emphasize those kind of things. And at the end of the week, they're going to give a presentation and talk about what they've learned. So that's going to be this next week. We call that our C camp, Skills, Education, and Empowerment. And then we have, and then the following 2 weeks, we're going to have STEP, which is Student Training and Employment Program. And I'm really excited because we're going to have 2 weeks on the Butler campus where we'll house the kids, which is awesome. Let me tell you what, we've got a lot of kids last time that when they stayed a week there said, I want to go to Butler now, which I love that. I love that. As an IU grad, I'm not sure how you really feel about it. So that's going to be coming up. And then also we're going to do a creativity camp, and that's where we're going to spend half the week doing cooking and cleaning. And, not a lot of cleaning, to be honest. We could have got any kids who said cleaning. Okay, so we said so cooking, but we are going to have to do some cleaning up afterwards.
We don't have time now.
Their groups, they're going to come in and help out with that. And we have several of our teachers who are going to be there and our students. And then they'll do an art camp to follow the latter part of the week. All right.
We can do it.
Yeah.
Hi, Diane Robin.
Yeah, it's great to see you. I'm wondering how early are the totally blind students immersed in Braille? And I ask because I remember my stepdaughter worked for a private school here in Indianapolis that when their kids enter kindergarten, they're expected to do like some light reading. And I don't remember.
We're going to pause for now and pick this up at 12:34, the banquet address.